Hello, this is Mike Arbath with this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. With me today are my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Welcome, guys.
Great to be with you. Sort of humming along in the early part of 23 here, and lots of action. I know, Ryan, you'll introduce the topic, but I think it's timely because, you know, we're sort of already in closed, you know, moving into closed deal cycles here. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those times in a deal. What we're talking about today is the consideration of liabilities and cash upon close. So oftentimes you'll hear a phrase of cash free, debt free when you get to a deal. And when you start to get to, I would say, the later strokes in a deal, this is where the cash consideration comes into play for the business. Oftentimes in IT services business, you see a relatively light balance sheet, as there's often services-based business, but there's still some considerations on what you owe and what you have. So I love, Mike, I think you're a really good expert here and have seen this of quite a bit of work within understanding this. So if you could just help us out and just start, what is cash-free, debt-free? What does that actually mean?
Sure, Ryan. Thanks. You know, cash-free, debt-free is exactly what it is. It means that at close of an M&A transaction that you as a business owner will take out the cash of the business, strip the cash, but you'll also not leave the business with any debt. And I have to distinguish between long-term debt and trade payables. Trade payables are acceptable debt to move over. They include things like your rent for your, you know, office space, and they may be a lease even. Some of those are negotiable. Let's say you lease some equipment that is considered a payable. And, you know, there could be other things like your internet provider and telephony and things that are what are considered trade payables. Those aren't counted as debt. But let's say you went and got a, you know, a big PPP loan and it's still sitting on your books. That would be debt. Another thing that a lot of services companies don't think about as debt are the value of the prepaids that you might get from a client. I call them prepaids. Some people call them customer deposits. But they're when a client makes a specific deposit with you or pays for services that haven't yet been rendered. There is a liability associated with that, and there should be on your balance sheet an offsetting asset. And it's usually considered as cash. So let's say that someone pays you $100,000 and you have yet to do $50,000 worth of work. You haven't realized that $50,000 worth of revenue. And likewise, there is a liability associated with it, and there should be an offsetting asset registered on your balance sheet. Sometimes services companies get a little sideways on that. They don't appropriately accommodate for those deposits, those customer deposits, as a liability. Hopefully that adds a little bit of clarity, Ryan, on kind of what is debt and what is cash.
That's a great start. It helps to just frame it up on the trade payables and the your prepaids and then the liabilities associated with it. When we hear cash-free, debt-free, it often seems like it comes from financial buyers. Is there a reason why a financial buyer would prefer cash-free, debt-free, or is there advantages to a buyer for it? Or heard differently, is there disadvantages to a seller? Are there scenarios in which you would not want to consider cash-free, debt-free?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Ryan. I would say that, yes, there is. You know, if you think about in a cash-free, debt-free situation, you're turning over all of your accounts receivable on the asset side of your balance sheet to a buyer. And if you're a relatively fast growth tech services company, tech enabled services company, you're constantly, you know, signing up new engagements or new clients or invoicing them. And you're doing so at an ever increasing rate month over month. And if you're doing that, it's likely that you have a fair amount sitting out in AR on the asset side of your balance sheet. Now, if you do a good job of collecting your cash and keeping your payables in order, you are in a situation where you may be leaving some money on the table there as a seller. And I think every situation is different. So I don't want to make this sound like an absolute. It is not. You know, you would have to, you know, have a financial advisor or an M&A advisor weigh in on this situation for you specifically. But in general, if you're a fast growth tech services company, cash free, debt free isn't as necessarily as good for you as having more of what I would call coverage ratio approach. If you think about a 1-to-1 coverage ratio, your assets equal your liabilities. That is turning over what we call net zero working capital balance sheet to a buyer. And in theory, if you have appropriate days of sales outstanding or AR aging, you should be able to collect, the buyer should be able to collect enough cash in the next 30 days to pay the liabilities that need to be paid in the next 30 days by taking a coverage ratio approach. Now, some buyers require a coverage ratio of more than what we'll call net zero working capital, or a coverage ratio of 1-to-1, or assets of equal liabilities. Some require a little extra on the asset side to accommodate for maybe some slow pay clients, particularly if you have AR that's aging, that's longer than 30 days. They may require, and justifiably so, having a coverage ratio of 1.1-to-1 or 1.2-to-1. In order to make sure that there'll be enough asset to cover off the liability side of the balance sheet. Now, in that situation that I've just painted, if, for example, you were to have just sold a big engagement and invoiced it, you would be able to recover that money, either in the true up to net out working capital, or at the time of close, depending on your buyer. So, where in a cash-free, debt-free situation, you would be foregoing that asset that you had just invoiced.
In that case, if you have a large deal, you're almost better off not taking the deal or taking the sale of that project?
No. I mean, you certainly should not interrupt your business. We often have said you should not interrupt your business or run it as if you're going to sell it. I'm just saying that you may be leaving money on the table in that situation if you take cash-free, debt-free, and you just, you know, you're growing quickly or you've just closed a big engagement. What we call coverage ratio approach, or one where you focus on having a balance sheet that's in balance at the time of close, would allow you to not leave the value of those assets on the balance sheet when you transferred it. So it's just a situational thing. Now, maybe you haven't done that, right? Maybe you're, and that's why we say every situation is different. Cash-free, debt-free can work for many people, and it is a negotiation. And I think what you need to know, all of these concepts are swirling around how much working capital is being left in the business to operate the buyer. You are selling a business as a going concern. And when you sell a business as a going concern, it needs to have enough working capital to operate post-close. You can't strip all of the assets out of the business, cash or otherwise, because then the definition doesn't hold water. You're not selling a going concern. You're selling an undercapitalized business. So having an advisor that can advise you as to whether or not a cash-free, debt-free deal is fair to you or not, or can take on the negotiation around a more neutral balance sheet approach to negotiate as close to net zero working capital or a working capital ratio of 1 or 1-to-1 would be important, because these concepts are complex and they're always ones that involve negotiations.
I think to kind of raise it up into culture, strategy, financial, trust. So in essence, and we like to start this discussion, you know, pretty early, it's like, hey, guys, let's make sure, you know, from a common sense perspective, that a seller gets credit for everything that they do up until the day of close. And then the buyer gets credit for everything, right? And so in that principle, it's like, well, no, in your example, I closed a massive deal, right? Well, I'm going to need to get credit for that as a seller. And to your point, sure, it's a negotiation. How much credit
How much guarantee is that revenue that's going to come through? All of those things need to be taken into account. But if all of a sudden the buyer's like, no, I demand this and we said, right, it's like, well, you're not negotiating in good faith. And so I think that that's also needs to kind of get brought into the discussion, because if that's the case, boy, we're running up against that. This just may not be a good fit.
Yeah, and I guess I would also add, Matt, you bring up a good point. There's lots of ways to handle this discussion and negotiation depending on your situation, whether it changes purchase price either way. It may impact purchase price. For example, if you have debt on your balance sheet and you haven't extinguished that debt pre-close, there is going to be a reduction in purchase price no matter what, whether you're working through a cash-free, debt-free transaction or whether you're working on a coverage ratio type model. For example, if you don't have enough assets to cover the debt on your balance sheet, then you're going to have a reduction in purchase price to cover that. That's just typically what happens in a close. Likewise, if you have excessive assets, whether they be in cash or AR that you've accumulated in the business, and yet you don't really have any liabilities, as an owner of the business, you have the right to harvest all of that and to be able to take it one way or another. I mean, we see from time to time business owners that run their business with excess working capital. Well, I should say more often than not we do, because they don't want to get into their credit facilities. A lot of business owners might cover a coverage ratio of 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, where their assets are twice as much as their liabilities or 3 times as much as their liabilities. And usually that's sitting in cash so that they can be flexible and nimble around running the business and making sure that they can meet their obligations without having to get into any credit lines or credit facilities. And in that case, that excess asset or that additional working capital should be harvested. It's the only time, frankly, that business owners are typically comfortable enough to harvest their excess working capital is when they sell. Because oftentimes they get in a mode that says, well, we just always run with a 2-to-1 ratio or a 3-to-1 ratio. And that's how we've done it since inception. That's what's where we're comfortable. We're conservative. We want to run our business in a way that we can be aware of any potential unforeseen issues. You know, things like COVID or pandemics, or, you know, they are able to weather the storms of maybe a drought in new customer acquisition or whatever it might be by being overcapitalized, if you will. And so the time to harvest it is when you sell, and it's just almost the only time you can do so. But I would just tell you that that knife kind of cuts both ways. If you have too much liability and you have a balance sheet that's quote unquote underwater, you may have heard that term, then it's up to you to, you know, shore up those liabilities prior to close. And likewise, if you're overcapitalized, you have the ability to harvest cash and excess asset at the time of close.
Do some companies use the historical cash on the books as a leverage point for negotiations? So if someone has a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 coverage ratio, is it often for a buyer to come back and say, well, you've been running the business this high, so you must require it? Is that a sticking point when it comes down to harvesting working capital?
Yeah, I mean, it's something a financial buyer always tries to do, and I think is inappropriate for them to do so. They say that, well, because you've historically been running it this way, you must need it. That isn't the case generally, and you should know that, right? You could run the business in the purest sense. You could run the business with, you know, current assets equaling current liabilities and technically have enough working capital to run it and meet the definition of a going concern. That may mean that you're short on cash from time to time, where you could either get in or out of a credit facility. And there's certainly plenty of people that run their business pretty close to a working capital ratio, 1-to-1. So there is a bit of a negotiation. This is, you're kind of getting into the nuance of the negotiation of how much working capital is enough, right? How much is enough to cover the liabilities and any contingencies? And it generally is never based, or shouldn't be based, I should say, on historically how much asset you have on the books. It should be really focused on how much is actually required. And, you know, our financial team here at Revenue Rocket can do, you know, meaningful testing about what is actually required And I think any credible buyer will be able to do the same versus what historically has been on the balance sheet from an asset perspective. And then you can begin to, focus on that number.
Jumping in, Mike, on that one is some owners, they feel better when they've got an excess amount of cash that's left in the business. And it's like, well, you know, I've got it for a rainy day. And we often guide to say, well, look at your past results. You don't need that much cash in the business. So let's kind of get it out of there.
Yeah, I would say that most entrepreneurs, because they've, bootstrapped these companies and built them by taking some risk, are, wanting to have a little extra cash to just sleep better at night. You know, they didn't want to have any speed bump that they're going to hit cause them to tip over to capitalization of the business. And I think, in many ways that's prudent. It's not necessarily needed, but it's prudent. And I often say that if it's the elixir that helps you sleep well at night, then, knock yourself out. But you do have the ability to harvest that money. It is your money. And we oftentimes will advise that people, reduce their asset holdings on the balance sheet prior to a transaction or in preparation for a transaction to sort of mitigate or neuter that negotiation argument from a buyer that says, well, you've had a coverage ratio 3-1 for the last 3 years. And as a result, you must need it in the business. So that's what we want. It's not, if you have a smart advisor, they're not going to let that happen. And because it just, the argument is just not very strong.
Matt, you've been in a number of these negotiations lately, and when you get to working capital and you get to the terms cash-free, debt-free from both buyers and sellers, it can often be a relatively contentious. I think that you're taking cash that an owner sees right in front of them, and it's very kind of hard to work through. What advice can you give to buyers and sellers to work through and come to a place that's better for, or the best place for everyone at the end?
I think don't kick the can down the road.
What Matt means by don't kick the can down the road, sometimes you'll hear people say, well, we can manage that in the true up, right? Oftentimes there's a 90-day or 180-day true up for working capital because you don't know what the expenses of the business are going to be very specifically. And likewise, you may not know what the assets are at the day of close, right? You may have gotten a check and let's say it came in the day before close. And so, you didn't get it deposited till the day after close, does that account or whatever. So there's oftentimes a true up because some of the bills for the business may come after close and cover both part when you own the business and when the new owner owns the business. So sometimes you'll hear a buyer or a seller, if they get to an impasse in the negotiation, say, well, we'll manage that in the true up. And they'll never really come to a reconciliation how to solve and define what's in and out on cash-free, debt-free, or what's in and out on a coverage ratio negotiation. And we think that's a mistake. There needs to be a straw man attached to the definitive agreement as an exhibit. There needs to be clarity about what's in and out. And there needs to be clarity about what unforeseen expenses or assets may be coming that could impact the true up. And the more time you take to get that right before close, the easier that true up negotiation is going to be. If you're just attempting to kick the can down the road to the true up and you have material issues to negotiate, but you're just trying to get closed on both sides because you're, feeling tired and you want to get across the finish line, that is a mistake. And ultimately is going to create some heartburn when you get to the reconciliation negotiation.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And I think that even starting earlier in the context of saying, hey, this is how we define cash-free, debt-free. And then gaining agreement as early as possible in terms of the framework at which you will drive out what adequate working capital needs are, right? And so the earlier that you can gain agreement by both parties that that there is a method, that it's logical and it makes sense, that the better, right? So that near the end of due diligence and near the close of the transaction, there's no surprises. And I think that that also really holds true and plays into, you know, what you're talking about in terms of what a definition of a true up is, right? It's, again, it's make it as logical as possible and do it as early as you can.
Yes, it's great advice, Matt. Appreciate it. And Mike, I appreciate your insights here on this topic. That's all the questions I had for you today. I'll turn it back over to Matt and Mike for any closing thoughts.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I think the key here is, and if this is not a strong business case for, you know, leaning on your accountant or a M&A advisor to help you determine what is a fair amount of working capital, I don't know what is. These topics are fairly complex for most business owners and do require some outside expertise and analysis of your financials. And certainly you're going to want to be leaning on your advisors to make sure that these numbers are negotiated fairly and that you're in a position to, you know, make sure that both sides come out sort of on top, if you will, of this negotiation. It is a give and take. It's important to know that, you know, what's typically good for one side may be not so good for the other and vice versa. So you need to walk a mile in the shoes of the other side and understand as they acquire your business that they've got to run it, right? That they need to be able to have adequate working capital to manage and run it, just as you would want that if you were buying the business. So with that, I will tie a ribbon on it for this week's podcast. We're here to help you get to the next level. And I would encourage you to drop us a note at info@RevenueRocket if you'd like to learn more, or stop by our website at RevenueRocket.com. So take care. Make it a great week. And we hope you tune in next time.